Welcome to the Adult Explore the Bible Weekly Leader Training Podcast, the podcast where we dive deep into scripture to uncover timeless truth. This podcast is designed for teachers who lead adult Bible study groups using Lifeway's Explore the Bible adult resources. Today, we will look at three key questions. First, what is the context of the passage? Second, what do we find in the passage? And third, what's one thing leaders should not miss this week in our leader resources? I'm Amber Vaden, your host. On the podcast with me today is Bob Bunn. Bob is a regular guest, so he is likely very familiar to you all. He's a member of our Explore the Bible team. And he specifically gives leadership to the Leader Guide, Quick Source, the Leader Pack, and our online leader helps found on our website. Additionally, he leads a group Bible study at his church. Bob, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Absolutely, Amber. Glad we have one extra week this quarter. So I'm glad I get to share it with everybody.
We do. And it's kind of unusual. It only happens usually every few years that we have 14 Sundays in a quarter. So it's a bonus, that's for sure. And so, yeah, you're bringing up the caboose on our study of Matthew. It has been because we started in winter. So it's been all of winter and now all of spring. It's been a really good study. Mm-hmm. Well, today we're looking at session 14, as Bob just mentioned. So we will study Matthew 27, verses 27 through 31, and verses 45 through 54. Well, before we jump in, I want to just make this one disclaimer. We're studying chapter 27, but that is not the end of the Gospel of Matthew, because we studied the very end on Easter. So I just wanted to remind everyone who's listening, if it seems like we have stopped short of studying all of this book, it's because we, on Easter, really wanted to study chapter 28. So just a reminder that that's what we did. Before we begin a discussion of our study passage, let's pause here to look at the events surrounding what we will study today. So I want to take a look at the context of our passage. The events described in Matthew 27, verses 27 through 31, and then also verses 45 through 54, they take place in Jerusalem on Friday of Jesus' last week. Just prior to this passage, several things have just happened, and they're all kind of important. Jesus and his disciples had gathered at Gethsemane to pray, and Jesus was betrayed by Judas. Peter also famously betrayed Jesus, refusing to admit that he knew him and he was with him in Galilee. At the beginning of chapter 27, we read about Jesus being handed over to Pilate, and Jesus was then questioned about his identity. Was he the king of the Jews? And at the festival, Pilate's custom was to release a prisoner whom the crowd chose, and when asked if they wanted to release Jesus or Barabbas, they chose Barabbas. And when the scene began to look like a riot, Pilate eventually released Barabbas and handed Jesus over to be crucified. So chapters 26 and 27 are filled to the brim with big events. And all of that leads us to the passage that we'll study today in Matthew 27. Let's take a look at our first scripture division, Matthew 27, verses 27 through 31. Following Jesus' trial before Pilate, soldiers mocked and beat him, then led him away to be crucified. Bob, what are the key takeaways that we should notice in these verses?
I think leaders can focus on at least two things in these verses. First, even as Christians, we tend to downplay the brutality mm-hmm. of Jesus' sufferings. We think about him on the cross, and we forget that those 6 hours were only part of what he endured. And also because we know the end of the story. Sometimes we don't really pick up on how bad it was, because we know, well, in 3 days he's gonna rise again. But he had been abused and humiliated long before he ever got to Golgotha. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Romans tried to sap as much strength and as much life out of their execution victims as they possibly could, so that when they put them on the cross, they wouldn't be there all day or for several days at a time. So they tried to actually really abuse them almost to the point of death before they ever got around to crucifying them. And that's in a sense, what they did with Jesus. You know, we say things like, by his stripes we are healed, from Isaiah. Well, this pre-crucifixion torture is what the prophet was talking about. This is where he got his stripes. He got his nail prints, and he got the sword in his side on the cross. But he got his stripes long before he ever got to the cross. But still, it was all part of God's plan, and it was also all part of our redemption. So it might be helpful for leaders to let adults just kind of sit in that for a little bit, to let them reflect on the suffering of Jesus, the brutality of that suffering, and the fact that our sin is the reason for that. He suffered because of us. It might even be good to kind of look up some cross references from other gospels, because some of the other gospels describe the suffering and some of the things he went through in different ways. I know in verse 26, which is just outside of our key passage, it talks about him being flogged. Mm-hmm. And you think about the cat of nine tails, and you talk about, you know, him being beaten and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's all part of that. You know, if you really want to plug into love and what it took for him to ransom us, the love that it took for Jesus to demonstrate to ransom us, this is where you see it. This is the kind of passage that drives that point home. And it really should create an emotional impact in us, not a manipulative kind of thing, but just an emotional feeling in our lives that, man, I can't believe this. It should make us hurt. It should break our hearts. And so, you know, if you can do that as a leader, if you can help them plug into that emotional side of it without manipulating it, then that would be great for this lesson. Mm-hmm. Another thing is there's a lot of irony in this lesson, in these verses in particular. Yes. You know, the soldiers mock Jesus as a king, but he really was a king. You know, and we see it again later when Pilate puts the sign above the cross that he's the king of the Jews, and the Jewish leaders get upset about that. But there was truth there. And it's a good reminder for us that while the world tries to water down and redefine truth or make a mockery of truth sometimes, that God is still in control and truth is still truth. Mm-hmm. Jesus really was who he said he was. Mm-hmm. The fact that the soldiers and the Jewish leaders and whoever else was involved in this, the fact that they were ignorant of his position, of his person, the fact that they were rebelling against that, that doesn't change truth. Mm-hmm. Even in their mocking, and the truth came out.
Yeah.
And Jesus backed up that truth 3 days later.
Goodness, that's exactly right. Like everything that Jesus said leading up to this about who he was and what he came to do, absolutely the next 3 days when he is resurrected, displays all of that was true. Well, let's keep going. Let's take a look at Matthew 27, verses 45 through 49. So at noon, darkness came across the land and lasted for 3 hours. Jesus cried out in Aramaic, asking God why he had abandoned him. And some of the onlookers mistakenly thought Jesus was calling out for help from Elijah and offered Jesus a drink. So this part of the passage, I think, is so interesting because it can lead to a question that you group leaders or your group members may ask as you study it. And the question is this: how does Jesus's crucifixion fulfill Psalm 22? How is it related to Psalm 22? Well, in verse 46, Jesus quotes Psalm 22, verse 1, and Matthew, recording it first in Aramaic and then translating it into Greek, said, Jesus had cried, my God, why have you abandoned me? Well, Psalm 22 is a psalm of David, and it is a lament psalm. And the psalmist is crying out to God in what can only be described as deep distress at being abandoned by God. And like the psalmist, Jesus felt abandoned by God in this moment on the cross, experiencing a separation from, and this calling out was a lament. So one thing we know about psalms of lament is that they often conclude with a declaration of faith or of praise. So as you're reading the psalm, the beginning of it is just difficult to read because the person is in such despair. And then by the end of the psalm, they come around and it's like they stand up and declare God to be God, and they declare some faith in him. And so after pouring out grief, these Psalms a lot of times arrive at a point of determined faith. And Psalm 22 does this. In verse 27, it says, "All the ends of the earth will remember and turn to the Lord. All the families of the nations will bow down before you, for kingship belongs to the Lord. He rules the nations." So the psalmist moved from suffering to victory, and he declared that in time, the whole earth would recognize God as a true king, sovereign over all things, while Jesus, enduring suffering, was ultimately victorious over sin and death. So it's real parallel. Those ideas are very parallel. So while Jesus only quotes verse 1, the entire psalm really communicates the suffering that he would endure and the coming victory and worship by all men that will one day take place. Well, the victory has already taken place when he resurrected, but the worship by all men will take place when he returns. So it's an interesting passage. And like I said, you might get a question about Psalm 22 and want to be able to help you know how to handle those questions.
Yeah, I think, Amber, it's really important to focus on this feeling of abandonment, mm-hmm. because this is real life for us. There are times when we wonder where God is. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the book of Hebrews says that Jesus went through all the stuff that we went through, only he did it without sin. And so it's comforting, I think, to understand that, yeah, when I wonder what God's up to and I wonder if he's really there, there was a time when Jesus felt that way too. Mm-hmm. And that might be good for leaders to kind of be aware and to realize and to remember that there may be folks in his class that are feeling abandoned right now, and or in their class that they're feeling abandoned, or they're feeling left out or whatever right now. And, sure. You know, this is something Jesus understands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly his experience here on the cross is much deeper than what we would experience, absolutely. But to understand that he was very much a human, also divine, but he experienced that as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, our next passage is also from Matthew 27. It's verses 50 through 54. "When Jesus died, the temple curtain was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth quaked, tombs were opened, and bodies of saints were raised. When the centurion and others with him saw these things, they declared Jesus to be the Son of God." Bob, can you share a little bit about these verses?
Yeah, I think we see three movements in these verses as you kind of read through them. Mm-hmm. First, and I love this, I love the statement, two things in verse 50. That first that he yelled, yeah. And then in the second that he gave up the spirit. For one thing, people on crosses didn't yell.
Right.
It was hard enough to breathe. Breath was very hard to come by. And most of the time, people were fighting for every breath they had. And really, most people who died on the cross probably died from suffocation because they couldn't get those breaths. But Jesus screamed out for everyone to hear. And this is probably the, you know, "it is finished" cry. Though we don't know that for sure because he doesn't say it specifically. Matthew doesn't specifically give us those words. But my guess is, comparing it to the other gospel accounts, that this is when Jesus cried, "it is finished." And so this was the victory cry. You mentioned this in Psalm 22, that we move from abandonment, we move from discouragement, we move from frustration in these lament psalms, but they end with this statement of triumph, this statement of victory. Well, if you want to think of Psalm 22 as being the opening song of that musical, this is the climax. This is where Jesus said, and so this was his song of victory. This was his yell of victory. It was a battle cry for him. And the fact that he gave up his spirit reminds us that he was in complete control through this whole process to the very end. Mm-hmm. In John's gospel, Jesus said that he would lay down his life willingly, that no one would be able to take it from him. And that's what happens here. He decided when the battle was over. He chose when to take his last breath. No one else set that agenda. No one else made that determination. He was in complete control. It happened according to his perfect timing as he was fulfilling the Father's plans and purposes for his life. He had it all under control. So that's one act. The second is the supernatural events that we see. Mm-hmm. And the darkness you mentioned in the previous scripture passage that we had, but here we see some other ones. And I think our resources do a really good job of describing what happened and explaining them and giving some background, some context. But it's also helpful, I think, for leaders to flash back to the to Matthew's purpose for this gospel. If we remember all the way back, and we talked about it, it's been 6 months since we started this, but all the way back, Matthew was writing this gospel to convince a predominantly Jewish audience that Jesus was the Messiah, the one that they had been waiting for so long. And so all he does throughout this entire gospel is point people to Jesus and point people to why he's the Messiah and prove to them that he is actually the Christ. And these signs are part of his argument. You know, only God can create earthquakes. Only God could have torn the veil in the temple. Only God could raise these people from the dead, the way that Matthew described him. And in a sense, this is God's way of affirming Jesus' cry that it is finished. This is God's way of saying, when Jesus says it is finished and breathes his last, God the Father says, yep, you're absolutely right. And we're going to move on. And of course, the probably the most obvious indicator that God is involved in this stuff is the tearing of the temple, the tearing of the veil in the temple. That was an impossibility. There's no way that could have happened apart from God. And our resources talk about that. But again, that opened access to the Holy of Holies. All of a sudden, the Holy of Holies is exposed, and the symbolism there is the access to the Father, that there's now access to God that was not there before. And that was something that the Messiah was going to provide. And so Matthew, again, is pointing toward this truth that Jesus is who he says he is. So that's the second act. The third is the centurion's confession. And this has sparked some debate over the years. Was he becoming a Christian? Was he actually not becoming a Christian? What does his confession mean? And folks debate that. And here's where it comes down to is, I think it's a really good reminder to us that Jesus died for everyone, and that salvation is available to everyone. Yes. If you think about all the people who are around the cross, and you tried to single out that one person of a whole crowd who would be least likely to be moved by Jesus' death, the centurion is probably that person. Or at least he's probably up near the very top of the list if he's not the very top mm-hmm. of the list. There was no reason for him as a pagan, Roman, experienced executioner to have any kind of emotional response to what Jesus was, what he was seeing around him. For him, it should have been just another execution. But there was something different about the way Jesus handled it and what he saw in the death of Jesus. And yes, it did move him. And he said what he said. And it reminds us that the gospel is a universal message. His confession is really a prelude to the Great Commission, which we did study, as you mentioned, way back at Easter in Matthew chapter 28. His confession is a prelude to that commission. And it's a hint of what's coming in the book of Acts, where the world where the gospel goes out from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the uttermost parts of the earth. People like the Roman centurion are going to find the gospel. They're going to meet Jesus, and their lives are going to be changed because of it. And the fact that he recognized what was going on, and he saw something different, and if in fact he did have his life changed because of this, then that's a living, breathing illustration of what's going to happen on a larger scale in just a few weeks' time from this. And yeah, it's great because that means that no one is beyond God's reach. If a crusty, pagan, Roman centurion can have his heart changed, if Jesus is powerful enough to reach in and touch him that way, yeah, then there's no heart that he cannot penetrate. There's no life he cannot change.
That is so helpful. So each week we highlight something on the podcast that we think group leaders should not miss in our leader resources. And this week I want to bring your attention to the bonus digital content. It is found on page 144 of the leader guide. So leaders, you can scan this QR code with a smartphone and you'll access a chart that details the events of Passion Week day by day. So it's a one-page visual that shows what are the significant things that take place each day of the Passion Week leading up to Jesus's death and resurrection. Well, Bob, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Well, thank you again for asking me. I've enjoyed this trip through Matthew over these several months, and I'm looking forward to our next adventure.
Yes. Well, don't miss next week's episode as we launch into a whole new quarter of study. We will begin our summer 2026 study of Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. We hope you'll join us.